There is a positive message here.
You can do this.
That might even save a few lives.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of LSHTM Viral, bringing you the science behind the COVID-19 outbreak. My name is Amy Thomas and I'm from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. There's no doubt that you would have heard the government's plea for us to continually wash our hands. But is this enough to stop the spread of COVID-19? Today, I'm joined by Wendy and Stephanie, experts in public health and hygiene, to explain it further.
My name is Wendy Graham. I'm the Professor of Obstetric Epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And I've been working on issues around maternal health in low-income countries for about 30 years. My particular specialisation is around infection and infection prevention in maternity units. And that's why I focus on the role of prevention, preventing infections, so the importance of hygiene in maternity units in low-income countries. And I've worked on that for quite a few years now.
Brilliant. Thanks, Wendy. And I'm sure we'll get into some of that stuff during the discussion. Stephanie, do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Thank you, Amy. Yes, my name's Stephanie Dancer. And I'm a professor of medical microbiology in NHS Lanarkshire in Scotland, and I teach over at Edinburgh Napier University. I've been interested in infection control as part of my remit, working in hospitals for over 30 years. And my particular interest within that has always been hospital hygiene, and in particular, hospital cleaning. And like Wendy, with whom I've collaborated on a number of occasions, both of us feel that it's a neglected area, and it's extremely useful to have this opportunity to talk about it today.
Great. Thank you, Stephanie. And we'll come on to that point of, you know, this being a neglected thing and some of the issues around that in just a moment. But before we launch in with all of that, Wendy, please, could you give us an overview of what do we mean by the word hygiene?
Well, I think it's a very interesting word for somebody who works at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And the whole question of the H in LSHTM is something a lot of us have discussed. So hygiene itself is a very interesting word. And there are, of course, like many of those words, both technical and common sense, there are lots and lots of definitions. I think one of the clearest is that hygiene refers to conditions or practices conducive to maintaining health and preventing disease, especially through cleanliness or through cleaning. So maintaining health, preventing disease, particular emphasis around cleaning. And the name hygiene actually comes from Hygieia, which was the daughter of the Greek god of medicine. And obviously the word hygiene has been in the school's title since 1899. And actually, when you look at that work of in and around preventing and maintaining health, preventing disease, issues of cleanliness, it's been in the work or the body of the school for many, many years. So to get back, hygiene basically refers to conditions or practices which are trying to maintain health or prevent disease, especially through cleanliness. But so oral hygiene, personal hygiene, and then environmental hygiene. And that's really the essence of what we're talking about in this podcast. Some people substitute the word environmental hygiene for environmental cleaning. But if you look at those, either whichever you use, there are basically two main parts. The cleaning, which is involving the removal of dirt, and disinfection to remove germs. So generally, we're talking about environmental hygiene. It's a set of activities where we're trying to prevent illness, maintain health by actions of cleaning and disinfection.
Why is it important to talk about hygiene during this outbreak, COVID-19?
So it's important because it's part of broader infection and prevention and control strategies. And we see this in COVID, in the COVID responsiveness. Some are trying to prevent the spread of disease, and some are trying to control the infection or the virus that has already happened. So it's really important. I mean, the way that it works, it's really important in any outbreak to try and prevent as much as possible, prevent the spread, so you keep people virus or infection free. And this is done by, in the general environment, regular cleaning and disinfection. But of course, you also need to recognize there are some areas that are higher risk, for example, in hospitals or care homes, for example, when we need a higher level of cleaning and disinfection.
And I just want to ask Stephanie, just to go back to talking about why this is important during the COVID-19 outbreak right now, Stephanie, you mentioned that you think this is something that is being neglected. Do you think that we should be talking more about hygiene and that it's something that is being neglected in this particular situation?
I think cleaning has been neglected for a long time, Amy. It's been a casualty of our success over the last century in making lots of wonderful antibiotics and antivirals and vaccines. And people tend to forget that surfaces host germs. They might not be quite as happy on a surface as they are in the human body, but many of the hospital pathogens that we deal with on a daily basis are quite happy in the environment on surfaces and will survive for hours, days, weeks, and even months unless they're removed by adequate cleaning. So that's crucial to remember, that it's not just germs in people or flying around in the air. The germs that we worry about are landing on surfaces and they are surviving, so that the surfaces themselves provide an important reservoir that we need to target if we are to look at all the infection control activities that we should be doing.
And Wendy, that sort of leads on to your point you were just about to make about different settings where this is really important. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes, I mean, obviously, as Stephanie says, I mean, the surfaces act as a reservoir, and there are different types of surfaces, and there are different types of environments. There's the public environment where we're going out, catching buses, moving into pubs, etc. And there's a lot of conversation about trying to curtail that sort of social interaction at the moment. So there are those sorts of environments. There's our home environment as well. And that's also something we need to take considerably. And then there are other environments, which again has been flagged by the government, that are higher risk in terms of the type of people that are in them and the types of procedures that are going on. So, for example, surgery. But, for example, a lot of conversations about people in care homes, elderly and frail individuals. So it's always a mixture of the people in an environment that explain how risky or how safe something is. So we have to recognise that there are different types of safeguards that we need in place for different environments and to protect different types of people in terms of their health and general vulnerability.
And there's been a lot of talk about washing hands during this outbreak and in general for spreading germs. What do you think about this in terms of hygiene? Is that enough?
This is my passion and has been for a long time, because I look at my hand right now, at my thumbs and the tops of my fingers, and I think the hygiene of my hands, the cleanliness of my hands, is only important because those fingers and thumb and hand have been somewhere. It's touched a keyboard, which is right in front of me. It touched the door handle of my office when I came in to the hospital. It's touched my steering wheel in my car. It's touched all sorts of sites in my home. And indeed, if I go out to pubs and clubs and restaurants, which I don't very much, and certainly not at the moment, there's all sorts of hand touch sites where my hands have been. And whilst the emphasis on personal protection, quite rightly so, has said, please look after your hands, please clean your hands, wash your hands as soon as you get home, wash your hands before eating, wash your hands after going to the toilet, that's all excellent. But we shouldn't forget that there is another side to the hand hygiene equation, and that is the cleanliness of the sites that hands touch. Just recently, we've seen images from other countries where suitably suited staff are spraying the streets and other public areas. And I wonder whether we could actually target in on the sites where we would be more likely to have impact on transmission of germs, including the current virus, rather than a sort of blanket spraying of all sorts of chemicals into the environment. So that's the point about why this podcast is coming about, is because we wish to shed a spotlight on the other half of the hand hygiene equation.
That's really nicely put. Thanks, Stephanie. And really interesting, because, you know, there's obviously lots of talk about hand washing, but as you said, there's a whole other strand to this, which is surfaces and what we're actually touching. You mentioned perhaps targeting particular areas or surfaces that would help prevent the spread in this outbreak. Do we have any idea about what those kind of sites or surfaces are?
Yes, Amy, that's a lovely question. There's something really quite straightforward that folk can do, whether it's in your home, but possibly right now, more importantly, if you're running a business to which the public have access, and that is, how do I know what are hand touch sites? Because sometimes they're not always that obvious. And how do I know which are the highest risk hand touch sites? If I was to stand in the middle of my shop and look around, where is that virus? It's an invisible criminal. We cannot see it. We know it's there. How do I work out which sites to target if I was going to do something about it? Well, we can do this by an audit, rather like a hand hygiene audit, or if you want to be really scientific, we call it a cross-transmission tree, whereupon you stand there with a piece of paper on a clipboard, if you like, and you watch to see where the hands go when people are frequenting your business, your area, when the public are coming in. What's the most frequently touched site in your shop? And I would say it's probably the outside door handle, unless you've got automatic doors. But once inside, where do people go? What do they touch? You can build up a very nice piece of information showing exactly where people touch and how often. And that is exactly the sort of information that you need if you want to do something about it. And this is a positive message. People can do this in their homes as well, particularly if you're looking after someone who's vulnerable, but also out in the public areas. Where are the things that people touch? Can I do something about it? Could I clean those? Because that offers a belt and braces solution to what we're seeing at the moment. If some extra cleaning attention is transferred to hand touch sites in the community, that might even save a few lives. And that's why it's important to get that message out.
Let me just add to that. I mean, I think, you know, obviously, both Stephanie and I, it's sort of partly it's very exciting in some ways to be having this opportunity to talk, but also everyone is very conscious of the fact of not adding to a sort of scare tactic in population and being very sensitive. I mean, people are very concerned about what the situation is. I'm sure they've got the message around hand hygiene. But the question is, anything that we try to, not just us, but generally in this area of public health, particularly in this sensitive moment, we need to give things that are very practical and very constructive. There's no point in asking people to do some things that are just simply not possible, given where they live or the nature of their life. But something like where you put your hands, I mean, as Stephanie says, you know, there are what we call high frequency touch sites. And like Stephanie says, they're often very obvious things. If you're really not sure, then as Stephanie's idea is, you could pinpoint that. And then it's a question about cleaning. Now, although, of course, a lot of this has arisen in the context of COVID, which is really tragic, this issue of keeping the environment clean applies to every other single pathogen that we may face. I mean, if we get on top of this with better hand hygiene and indeed better environmental cleaning and recognition of prevention by cleaning, it's not rocket science, it's things that have been known about for centuries, but often not practiced, then we can have a general benefit that goes over and above this tragic, you know, what we're trying to face now with a very urgent responsiveness. We can do something that has a lasting benefit. So finding out the frequency hand touch sites, and then also trying to avoid those. And when we don't have to go around touching our hands on everything these days. Of course, you have to keep yourself safe. But it is also the case at the moment that if you can avoid touching, so much the better.
That's really great advice. Thank you both for those messages. And we've talked a lot about cleaning the sites, and you mentioned, you know, frequent places that you might put your hands, and whether we at this moment in time can, you know, help sort of keeping those surfaces in particular quite clean. What can we use to keep them clean?
There are all sorts of products out there that you could potentially use for cleaning, and possibly more likely disinfection. Now, there are some very strong debates that have been raging over the last 20 years or so about whether disinfectants are always needed for cleaning, particularly in the healthcare environment, or whether we can get away with soap and water or detergent-based cleaning. And some of us think that detergent-based cleaning is actually the first choice, whereupon you don't necessarily want to kill the germs that you're removing from a surface. You just want to get rid of them without too much impact on the environment and also your purse. Mm. And it is a possibility that detergent wipes or soap and water, a bit of washing up liquid in a bucket of clean, warm water, and either a disposable or a reusable mop or wipe, and I can talk about what we mean exactly by disposable and reusable and how you manage that. One wipe, one surface, one direction. So let's just take an easy one, a supermarket trolley handle, which is one of my favourite sites in the community. And one would take your clean wipe with detergent, soaked in detergent or an impregnated wipe, and you start at one side of that handle with your hand right round it, and you move from one side to the other side in one swoop and discard the wipe. Or if you're reusing it, then what you would do is probably change your bucket of detergent once every 10 to 15 minutes, which is the sort of advice we have in the hospitals for detergent type cleaning. But the point is you're removing the germs on that hand touch site, one wipe, one site, one direction. Now, some of my colleagues think that disinfectants are required. And indeed, I have to say, there are some very nice like antiseptic or low-key disinfectants out there, which are kind to hands, not like bleach, where you have to wear gloves. And these could be used to spray particular surfaces and then use a disposable dry wipe, possibly microfiber, possibly something else. The NHS version of a J-cloth is entirely adequate. And once again, one wipe, one site, one direction, discard. And you have immediately reduced the risk of a transmissible pathogen on that surface. So arguments between whether detergent only or disinfectant, right now, in the middle of this outbreak, whatever you can get hold of, but keep that one wipe, one site, one direction. Don't keep going backwards and forwards over the same surface. You'll just transfer organisms around. What you want to do is remove it.
In order to demonstrate this, we asked Sam to run us through how you correctly clean a surface.
My name's Sam Tweed. I'm a medical doctor and I'm a student of public health here at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. I've worked with Prof. Wendy Graham on hand hygiene and environmental hygiene in the past and in some low-income settings as well. So this is something that is really important, but it's something that everybody can do. Obviously, the first thing we'll have done is we'll have washed our hands properly, taking the whole time singing whatever song that you want to do that to. And then we can start thinking about surfaces. So surfaces are really important, thinking about high-risk areas as well. There are some important principles, so going from clean areas, finishing with dirty areas, and so that's something that we can do just now. I'd like to demonstrate. So importantly, you have to get a clean cloth and fold it in half, make sure that you've got enough space that you can properly wipe. One of the other important things is about the elbow grease as well. So you've got to really use the force, and that actually helps to dislodge microorganisms. So my hands are clean. I'm going to make sure I've got plenty of cleaning solution onto the cloth. And then on the surface, I'm going to go, where if we're imagining the center of the surface is the dirtiest area, I'm going to go from the outside right into the middle. So going across the whole surface and using the elbow grease as well to make sure that I've got everything covered. And then in a systematic manner, making sure that we've not missed any areas, I'm going to come right the way into the center. All right. And then either if it's a disposable towel, we can clean that away, or it needs to go back into to disinfection. And then we can start again with a new cleaning cloth.
Wendy, you've obviously worked in low and middle income countries and done a lot of research in that area. What kind of barriers are people facing there that are different to here in the UK?
Thank you very much, Amy. I'm sort of delighted. I mean, it's good that we've obviously focused on the local situation for now, but as many people have seen, that we're seeing evidence that COVID is present in low and middle income countries, not at a peak yet, but then finding those cases is much more difficult in low income country settings. But I think we have to sort of start with the health systems and the general infrastructure of those countries are much more challenged. And so one of the things I would want to flag is that, you know, hand hygiene and cleaning really depends on water. It depends on other things, but you can't use alcohol-based hand rub for cleaning the floor, for example. So even if we have some types of substitutes, the basic is you need a good, reliable, clean source of water in communities, and you need it in health facilities as well. And yet we know that there are about a quarter of health facilities in low-income countries do not have a reliable source of water, a quarter. Now, health facilities in particular, you would expect, most of us certainly in this country, you wouldn't dream of going to a healthcare facility that didn't have water or functioning sanitation. And yet the situation of infrastructure in many of these low and middle income countries is so challenged that you don't have those basics. And so things like infection prevention and control become an even bigger challenge. We have very crowded facilities. We may have shortages of drugs and certainly shortages of staff. The crowdedness is caused not just by patients, but often patients are accompanied by visitors, their family. Their family needs to be there to feed them because there's no food services and nor anyone to empty your bedpan. So they're challenging. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like a pathetic situation. It's not. There are some most amazing people who work 24/7 in these settings, of all sorts, the cleaners, the plumbers, the doctors, the surgeons, the nurses, the midwives, people that are working extremely challenging surfaces. But there's no doubt about it that an outbreak presents many, many challenges in the community and in facilities. Now, the only thing I would say is what's also emerging is that in those countries that were challenged by Ebola, they learned many lessons about emergency responsiveness. Ebola was another condition that needed strong infection prevention and control. And thankfully, some of those systems that were put in place for that emergency are now helping those countries in tough times as they are facing the possibility of COVID-19. But besides an outbreak situation, some of these problems of lack of water and sanitation, of soap, I've worked with colleagues in places where there's been no water for a couple of months on the maternity unit, despite there being lots and lots of deliveries, nowhere to wash your hands, no easy way to wash the floors. So in that situation, you need to have different types of strategies. We can't often talk about having one wipe. We might not even have a mop or a bucket. So the scenarios there are quite different, but people are very resilient and resourceful. And there are groups working. And thankfully, I see in the news last night, there's real recognition of more funds going to low and middle income countries to help them their responsiveness, and infection prevention and control must be a core part of that responsiveness. So it's a very different situation. They will develop their own responses. It will be recognizing there are some major constraints of infrastructure, but as they say, where there's a will, there's a way, and there are some amazing people fighting this in these parts of the world.
I think that really highlights the differences between countries here and the challenges they're facing. Do you think that we need to sort of tailor our public health messaging in each country to address these hygiene concerns at a deeper level?
Well, I would say that the solution may be different, and I'm not talking about clean water either when I talk about solution, but ultimately it's the same message, is that what hands touch, keeping those hand touch sites clean, is just as important. It is as important as keeping your hands clean. And each country will work out, as Wendy suggests, innovative ways of dealing with that if they don't have the resources or even the clean water for cleaning their local surfaces and high-risk surfaces. We are truly blessed in this country. We have plenty of products and the resources to be able to apply that message. Hand hygiene is equal and opposite to cleaning hand touch sites. We can implement that into our daily lives, in our hospitals, in our homes, in the community, in care of the elderly in the community, and businesses, schools, cinemas, supermarkets, you name it. There is a positive message here. There's something that all of us can do, as well as our hands, keeping our hands clean, to try and mitigate as far as we can the outcome of this awful outbreak.
I agree. I mean, it's one of those things that's sort of universal. I mean, it's quite interesting as you move between different parts of the world, the sort of the reaction to the words clean or cleanliness varies. I mean, a lot of issues around hygiene, and my fellow professor at the London School, Val Curtis, talks about issues of disgust and how culturally issues of keeping things clean and keeping yourself clean or indeed your mind clean, these are very deep-seated things. But the advantage is that it means a lot to people. And if the message is right about the importance of hygiene or importance of keeping your hands safe and having surfaces that are safe, then I think, as Stephanie says, it's pretty universal. We just need to be culturally adapted. There are some sensitive areas around hygiene. Nevertheless, the principle is the same, that this is something that can prevent problems and keep us well. And at the moment, that's really what we want. We need some positive messages that you can do this. And I think the other thing, and some very interesting reporting by Susan Mickey, Professor Mickey from the University of London, about behaviour and human behaviour. I mean, although doing hand hygiene, washing your own hands may be for yourself, it's also a great public service. Because if you keep your hands clean and then you're touching surfaces, you're not infecting those surfaces for the next hand to come along. So there needs to be a sort of a recognition that when you do these things, whether you clean the surface, you wash your hands, you touch a surface, that loop of keeping things clean, keeping your hands clean, you're doing it for yourself and you're doing it for broader society. And I think we need those messages here. I mean, that we're doing it for more than just ourselves. I mean, a lot of the early work on hand hygiene, particularly in healthcare facilities, has shown that often, in some situations, healthcare professionals will wash their hands after they've attended a patient. And that's really to protect themselves. That's the sort of view. However, if you want to protect the patients, you wash them first, your hands beforehand as well. We've got to get into this situation of hand hygiene, clean surfaces is for us and for everybody else.
I think that's a really strong message that's resonated from this discussion, both with you and Stephanie, you know, coming from different viewpoints, but essentially there's a really, really strong positive message, as you said, for people to keep surfaces as well as hands clean in this loop to help stop the spread of the infection at the moment. Just before we end the chat, is there anything else that you would say is a take-home message?
I think the one thing I would like to say to round off my contribution is that Miss Nightingale would have approved.
Fantastic. And Wendy, what would you say?
Absolutely. I love that. I mean, my youngest daughter is called Florence, and she's also a nurse. And so anything is means a lot to me. And my other daughter is an ICU doctor. So feeling this personally at the moment as well. My point is, I mean, I know we can't do this at the moment. We need a campaign to hug a cleaner, and we definitely can't hug a cleaner at the moment. But the thing that really strikes me is, particularly in my work in lots of different cultural contexts, is that cleaning is often undertaken by people who are not valued for what they do. They're often the most marginalized members of society. They don't have good protection of themselves. They have their small children back at home. They're doing a thankless job, and people just walk over their clean floor and don't even acknowledge them. I would hope, if one thing, that every time you see somebody cleaning, you say thank you.
I couldn't agree say more with you.
Absolutely. Say thank you.
And I just want to say thank you both for this great chat. I think this has been so useful and such a strong positive message in this time. And I hope many of our listeners will find this useful and interesting. So thank you again for joining us. It's been really great. And hopefully, yeah, speak to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. Thank you.
So that was Wendy Graham and Stephanie Dancer giving us some really important and useful insights about hygiene and cleanliness at this time. If you want more information, as always, please visit our website www.lshtm.ac.uk/coronavirus. Make sure you subscribe to LSHTM Viral on any podcast platform where you get your podcasts, and stay tuned for the next episode. Thanks again for listening.